Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. President Trump has put a hold on his decision last week to allow big game hunters to bring back tusks and other trophies from elephants killed in two African countries. The news sparked outrage from some, but Alaska Congressman Don Young says the only way to save the elephant is to hunt it. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
Young says he's all for saving elephants. But he's been to Africa 7 times and says every country he's been to has a surplus.
So if we don't hunt them, they will hunt them and kill them for food and indiscriminately and sell the ivory.
The African elephant is still listed under the Endangered Species Act. Young says American hunters pay big bucks to take an elephant, and their fees are often the only money an African country has to pay game wardens and improve conservation.
As a hunter, we pay the concession ear, the government, $55,000 to shoot an elephant.
It seems like it's so much money, but then there's no record of how that money is actually spent.
Masha Kalanina of the Humane Society International says in Zimbabwe, the going rate to shoot an elephant varies from $30,000 to $50,000. But she says there isn't enough transparency to ensure the money actually goes to conservation. News the U.S. would end the ban on importing elephant trophies from Zimbabwe coincided with reports of a military coup there.
It's constantly ranked as one of the most corrupt in the world. There is poor rule of law and enforcement. And all of this contributes to the fact that we cannot expect there to be sound wildlife management at this time.
The U.S. says Zimbabwe is better at transparency now. The government had planned to issue trophy import permits for elephants taken in Zimbabwe between 2016 through 2018. Don't expect Don Young to apply.
I have no desire to shoot an elephant, although they say it's the most exciting hunt of all.
Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Organizers anticipate some 200 participants will gather at the University of Alaska Fairbanks this week for a 3-day symposium on tribal governance. The event comes on the heels of a decision by Alaska's Attorney General last month recognizing tribal sovereignty. KUAC's Robert Hannon reports.
Kerry Stevens is University of Alaska Fairbanks Assistant Professor of Tribal Management and one of the organizers of this week's Tribal Governance Symposium. She says recent events will undoubtedly occupy much of the discussion at the symposium. In October, during the Alaska Federation of Natives Conference, Alaska Attorney General Jana Lindemuth issued a ruling that recognized the sovereignty of Alaska's 229 tribes. Stevens says sovereignty includes greater self-determination as well as forging enduring relations.
Building stronger, better partnerships between tribal governments and Alaska Native corporations will be a big part of the dialogue, and we see a huge momentum in that work of building those bridges for the future.
Stevens also praises the First Alaskan Institute, which is co-sponsoring this symposium. She says the organization is doing groundbreaking work and racial equity. She says the symposium blends native cultural values with the more academic structure. For example, Stephen says each panel discussion will include an elder.
And as elders share their stories, it puts all of the learning into a context that Alaska Natives from all over the state can then equate to their daily lives and put into practice.
Stephen says the symposium's title, Land, Water, Life, underscores the holistic approach towards management native culture exhibits. For Brooke Wright, that's almost literally the case. The young mother of 5 grew up in Rampart. She says her family depended on subsistence practices, and she entered the tribal management program to learn advocacy skills to ensure that continues. She now serves on the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission.
I started out as a commissioner, and at the last meeting, I was actually selected to be the chair, and I don't think I would have taken those positions had I not attended tribal management.
Wright says the program also spurred her to continue her education. She's now enrolled in UAF's undergraduate program in fisheries. The Symposium on Tribal Governance continues through Wednesday at noon at UAF. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
Technology that removes fine particulates from wood and coal stove smoke is being readied for testing in North Pole as part of a citizen science project. Local veterinarian Gene Olson and a group of other Citizens for Clean Air members installed the electrostatic precipitator device in the wood stove pipe at our clinic last week, and Olson says it's awaiting final check.
To make sure that it's centered right and isn't going to arc. I haven't lit the fire in my stove to check that yet, but I'm planning to do that this week, and we're working on getting some instruments to test the emissions in all different conditions this winter.
Olson received the $2,000 Swiss-made unit called an EcoTube from company representative Nico Lauer. Lauer traveled to Fairbanks last week to deliver and help install the stack-mounted device, which creates a low-power electric field inside the stovepipe.
And this electric field basically ionizes the particles that go through it. They get charged electrically, and because of the electric charge, it gets attracted to the chimney and deposits there. It takes up all the fine dust out of the smoke.
Electrostatic precipitator technology has a long history of use in power plants and other industrial applications. The EcoTube residential-size unit has been available for 6 years, but only in the U.S. since September. Lauer says two others have been installed in the United States, but thousands are in use in several other countries, and it should work here too.
We have no doubts whatsoever that's going to function right away. My recommendation is that you do probably a season's worth of testing to get the assurance that this thing operates well.
We don't have the information necessary to really evaluate its functioning under our conditions.
North Star Borough Air Quality Control Commission Vice Chair Kathy Cahill has a PhD in atmospheric science and 3 decades experience studying air pollution. She says proving the effectiveness of the EcoTube will require thorough local testing.
Yes, they've used it other places in the world, but they don't have a long track record of working with the kinds of fuels we work with. So I'm definitely interested in seeing how this is actually going to function.
Cahill applauds the citizen science project that Dr. Olson and Citizens for Clean Air have undertaken in North Pole. She says the borough does not have the capacity to test the EcoTube.
At the moment, having people watch what's happening at Jeannie Olson's house in terms of how the ESP works is going to be a key first step, and then we can try to see if we can apply for grants for pilot projects.
EcoTube's Lauer says the company has already gotten the units certified in other countries and is willing to go through the process in the U.S.
If there's issues about certification by the EPA, we'll be delighted to do it. Needless to say, it's approved around the other countries in the world where people are using it.
The technology was brought to local attention by Borough Assembly member Lance Roberts, who sponsored an ordinance to allow people who install the devices on their stovepipes to be able to operate them during local burn bans triggered by poor air quality. The measure, which is pending before the Assembly, also proposes that qualifying residents be able to be reimbursed the cost of the device through a borough-subsidized program. Dan Bross.